Okay, welcome to the Arizona State Hospital Independent Oversight Committee. It is July 20th and it's 6:01. And as we begin, I want to welcome everyone again and ask if anyone has a disclosure of conflict of interest. And if so, please state it. I know that Larry has sent out the forms to fill out. Okay. For our last meeting, we didn't have meeting minutes, so I don't think there's anything to review or approve from that. Okay, any update from ADOA?
Yes, Lori. Good evening. I do have one update for the committee, and it's regarding the executive session and how we approach that. Open meeting law is very specific, and which you can go into open meeting law, which you can go into executive session for. They list 9 things that you can go in for, and a lot of it doesn't really pertain to the IOC and what we do. So the main thing is for us and for the what and how it really affects the committee is that discussion on membership on an applicant coming into a committee and or a discussion on a report that we need to do a deeper dive on to discuss some personal information on that on one particular committee member. So they're very stringent on that, and that came up when we had our open meeting law training in June with the ombudsman, sitting through his training. And then on top of that, we had an internal audit that we had some auditors sit in on our calls frequently, that was determined that we're kind of not approaching that the right way. So what we need to know going forward are the reasons why we want to go into executive session, and it needs to be listed on the agenda. It's very specific. So if we don't have executive session and the reason why we want to go into the executive session on the agenda, then we cannot go into executive session. We have to table it for next meeting or have a special meeting later on in the week to make that happen. Yes, Lori.
So if, for example, we wanted to talk as a committee, but we really want to respect the privacy of the patients and not give away their personal information, but we think that the discussion would provide so much information that it would reveal their identity, could we use executive session? And then how would we couch it so it doesn't, again, give away the personal health information?
Yes, absolutely. And that would be a particular, that would be one of the reasons why you would want to go into executive session, because you don't want to expose that individual or you know, release PII information to the general public. So we want to make sure that we protect his identity or her identity. So we want to make sure that that's covered, but we need to know that up front. So if you're reviewing an IR report and you have questions on it, and it looks like a human rights violation, then that's something you probably want to go into executive session on. And then on the executive session, the reason you would just say discussion on incident report, you can just list the number or possible human rights violation on incident report, and that would be suffice. So
okay, could we do it proactively, like if we are meeting with patients, or if we get a call and ahead of the meeting, these patients want to talk about X, but we don't want to bring it up in the meeting, and we go into executive session. So would I say potential human rights violations or I don't know what you're saying. Okay.
Yeah. We would work together on that to make sure that that's worded correctly for you. But yeah, then that would be the case that you want to make sure that that particular individual is protected and is and spoken in confidence and not in the public meeting. Yeah. So that, you know, that the way we approached that from the beginning, now toward the end, when we actually go into the executive session, that's where it's going to get a little trickier, because Google Meet has a breakout room feature, but we're unable to record in the breakout room for Google. I've tried that. I've been working with my IT department and working with Google, and right now that technology is not available to us yet, unfortunately. So we have to have another Google Meet link, which is going to be a little tricky. So what will happen is, I did put that second link on that email I sent out today. So if you have that, great. If you don't have it, I can certainly post that link in the chat, and you can click on that link and it'll just open up a new tab on your computer. Or if you're on a mobile and you're on a phone, there is a PIN number, a phone number you can call in as well. And then after executive session, we get that recording of that. Then we go back into the original Google Meet link to either vote. If you decided you want to move forward on something, then you would vote, or just simply just close the meeting. Does that make sense? So it's going to be a little clunky, and I apologize about that until we get a better way to do that. I don't know of another way. That we tried several different ways, and that's the best way so far.
Okay. Well, thank you, Larry. Anything else?
Other than that, the fiscal year for the state ended June 30th, so new fiscal year has started in July, beginning of July. So year-end reports are due November 1st, and I have it on my list to do tomorrow morning. Actually, I got really busy this afternoon, but I will send out an email out to all the chairs listing kind of the framework of what really goes into the year-end report. We can kind of use that as a guide as you complete that. If you don't have a subcommittee to work with to get your year-end report completed, I suggest you do one or set one up. I think it's beneficial for you. It's not fair to you to shoulder all of the whole load to make that happen. And I'm always here too to help with them on the administrative side, to help formatting and get it ready to go for you. And then the chairs themselves, you guys will actually submit the reports like you did last year, and I'll help get all that together for you as well.
Okay, I'm so excited.
I know, everybody loves that.
Yeah.
I hate being the bearer of bad news, you know, again, I'm here to help. If you need anything from me, let me know. I'll do my best for you. Really, that the executive session was the main thing, and there's a quorum issue as well. So if you get lower than seven people in a committee, your lowest number you can go is four in an IOC meeting. So if you go lower than four, then you can't proceed. So if you had six people on your committee, you got to have 100% attendance. Or seven, you got to have 100% attendance to meet quorum. So you can't go five and then have three. You can't do that. You'd have to have four. So hopefully we won't get down to that point. I'm trying to work through some recruiting efforts on my end too as well, to help boost the committee membership as well for you. So I'm working on some things, trying to get a link out in the newsletter and whatnot. So I'm working on some things, but as of yet, I haven't had any luck, but I'm trying.
Okay. Thank you, Larry. And for those that don't know, Ashley, who we will dearly miss. She got a wonderful opportunity working for Department of Corrections and Department of Corrections and Behavioral Health. And because of that, it's a great opportunity for her, but then it presented a conflict of interest. So she had to step down when she was offered the job. She is going to try to recruit some other lawyers that she knows, but anyone out there on the committee or administration, if you know attorneys that have a passion for this, we'd love to have them join.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's the best bang for your buck is to word of you guys actively going out and talking to people and seeing people and trying to recruit people that way. Instead of just getting a spam letter in the mail or whatever. So it does work, boots on the ground, word of mouth. And I think that's the best way to recruit by far. So.
Okay. I'm not sure if there's any other IOC members out there from other IOCs, but we have a standing agenda item for other IOC members if they want to give an update on their IOC. Okay, hearing none, then, and we didn't have any action items. I was wondering, I couldn't remember, Mike, whether I know the telephone delays that were spoke of last time by Kay and also by our committee members that, and I myself, have had problems at times getting the operator to answer the phone. And it's not always, and it's random. And from now on, you know, we promised that we would try to keep a log on what days or what times did it seem to be excessively long. And I know you were following up on that. Do we have any update from the follow-up?
Yeah, hi Lori. Good evening, everybody. I haven't had any other complaints about that since the last time this group spoke. I know that we met in the, and when I say we, I mean this committee, we met in the end of June, and we did discuss at that point that we were going to expand the phone hours on July 1st. I haven't heard that did not happen. I don't know if Kay has any information on that, but if there are any other specific days and times where you're running into struggles, by all means, let me know.
The phone times have been expanded, so that's been working fantastically. So we have phones now open from 3 to 11, which is nice. I am still having problems with specific operators. I just know them by name now because I recognize their voice. And I actually received a letter from one of my friends saying that they had tried calling during the open phone hours, and they were unable to get through. And so they decided to write me a letter instead. And I think that's just getting frustrating from our end and our friends and family's end. You know what I mean? Like, their job is to answer these phones, and certain operators just aren't doing it.
Okay, by any chance, did your friend who wrote you a letter, did they give you a day and time that happened?
It was multiple times that she tried calling. She's starting to keep a log now too. So okay. I'm keeping a log, she's keeping a log. We're all just trying to get specific data. Like, I mean, I've been kind of collecting it on my own, but we need to have actual dates and times, and so we're doing that now.
Okay, and next time I see you, if you want to give me some dates and times, I'll follow up on my side.
Okay, thank you.
Yep.
Thanks. Okay, as far as the other follow-up, I'm not sure. I know that you provided information on incident reports last time, or staffing incident reports. I wasn't sure if there was another one since we didn't have meeting minutes. So I put this in just if the committee members remember, now's the time to bring it up. I couldn't recall. So Mike, do you have any administrative update?
At this point, I don't. Larry kind of took what I was going to say about the fiscal year ending and us entering state fiscal year 24. The budgets have been reloaded, and the hospital is kind of off and running, just like all the other state agencies right now. So,
excuse me, this is Barb. Who was that speaking?
That was Mike Sheldon.
This is Mike.
Okay. Thank you.
Do we have an update on when the surveillance system will get finalized? I know that they laid the cable down and it was approved, the budget was approved.
Yeah, so the best guess estimate I have is that it's going to be sometime late next calendar year right now. You are correct. They did begin the process of installing all the new fiber optic cables across the hospital. They've spent a good amount of time in the past several months really nailing down the final schematics of how the system will be architectured, what cameras they're going to purchase, servers they need to buy, everything that will make this system work as efficiently as possible. My understanding right now, Lori and committee members, is the delay is the lag lead time on getting the equipment in. So some of the stuff that we need specifically around like backup battery systems and stuff like that is on a 40 to a 52 week lead time. So if they order it right now, it won't physically be on site and ready to install until, you know, next July. So that's the biggest hang up right now, unfortunately, is just the delays that they're experiencing in trying to order the necessary equipment.
Okay.
But you are correct, Lori, the budget did get passed and the project was funded.
Okay. What about, I haven't been by Ash in a while, have they started construction on Bower Park?
No, they have not. I actually, let's see, this is July 20th. About a week ago, I was given the final blueprints to sign off on from ADOA. That had been approved on by the city of Phoenix. I did a cursory review of those plans and I had two or three comments specific to how they were gonna handle the fence line for Ash's property. It was nothing significant. It was more of just we had agreed that as part of the project, they would relocate the hospital's 12 or 15 foot perimeter fence to the other side of the facility so that we can maintain a secured perimeter, and the plans omitted that part. So I told ADOA to, you know, go back, check your notes, put that back in, and then they can be off and running. I have heard, Lori, just so you know, and I don't have this officially yet, but they're also running into the same problems with their supply orders that the security system is running into. Specifically around a lot of the electronic components for like the electrical panels and all stuff like that, where some of the stuff, it sounds like it's on almost a 1 year lead time. So it's unfortunate. It's not going to be up and running anytime soon. And I wish I had better news on that project.
Okay. Well, thank you. So we can hear from other voices. I think Melissa and Barb did some patient visits. Do you guys want to report on that? Oh, Chuck, you have your hand raised before we have a report.
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes.
So, Michael Sheldon, I had this question for you. How does the hospital or whatever the administrative entity is that orders equipment, how do they select? Are they tied to a particular equipment distributor? Because I can only say it sounds unreasonable to have to wait for a year for parts without saying to myself, I'm gonna look at some other company. This is a ridiculously long lead time. Just a thought.
Yeah, so great question, Dr. Goldstein. And this is one of the kind of nuances of working under the statewide enterprise, is that we have to follow procurement code. So basically the way that this works is that we develop a project plan and then we put it out for bid. The engineering companies, the Department of Administration hires what's called essentially a general contractor to oversee the entire project. And then that general contractor solicits all the equipment. But yeah, I know I absolutely agree with you. I'm very much in alignment with the way that you think. If I can't get something tomorrow, then it's too late. It takes too long. But unfortunately, it's just the way that the state operates. We can't give the perception of, you know, giving favorite bids to certain companies or whatever it may be. But I'm 100% on board with you on this, that time is of the essence. And we need to move on this stuff. But yeah, that's unfortunately one of the, we're kind of hamstrung by procurement code.
Yes. So do they have to be, I know like in corporate world, we had to have approved vendors, approved suppliers, and they went through kind of a vetting process. Larry, that's probably similar. Or you have to get an exception if you stray from the approved vendors.
Yeah, Mike is exactly right. You got to stick to the procurement codes and vendors approved by the state. So,
yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, so Melissa or Barb, do you want to report on your visits quickly? And then I'll go to the few incident and accident reports.
Okay, yeah, I'll start. This is, okay, it's, I can't remember now. Can I use their names in the meetings?
No. We try not to use names or even specific units.
Okay. Thank you. That's a good thing I have. All right. There are two men who have, this is the first call, who have a medical issue with the spine and other problems. They both have pain management, have medical issues, and they were sent by ASH on the same day, actually, to go to a pain management clinic without the X-rays and MRI that had been done. The nurse at the clinic, which is in Chandler, said that they needed some medically necessary treatment, but she also didn't get the imaging or the records until asking three times. So there's then ASH denied them the treatment because it's all allopathic. It's an allopathic facility, and ASH won't do that. And one of the patients doesn't want narcotics, wants the treatment, and I can name them if you want me to. Given that they're of medical necessity, it violates the patient rights if they're not given that treatment. The only thing that one of them got was a pillow. Skipping some of the stuff. One of the patients filed a grievance, and actually he was spoken to in a really inappropriate manner by one of the doctors. The nurse practitioner, that patient's nurse practitioner changed, and then he's also having difficulty with that's somebody else. Oh, one of the things that had happened was the staff did a search on one of these patients in the morning looking for contraband. The patient had a vape in his room, but the staff took his foam rollers and other things to help him, took a towel and threw his towel away, and dumped one of his drawers and violated his civil rights. So this patient requested a video of May 21st to see what was going on in the hall at the West, and from the West camera, which is where they threw his stuff. They also destroyed plants outside, and this is they took some of his personal belongings, and that, and the patient asked how a search should be done, obviously not that way. Or he said that they should take an inventory of what they're doing in front of them and give a reason why he thinks it's retaliation.
Hey, Barb, one question. And I know Mike had to step away, but maybe some others on the team can answer. I thought that there was always an inventory list of what each patient owns and has. So couldn't they use that to compare with, I mean, it doesn't sound like they were supposed to have a vape unless you said cape and I heard vape, but I didn't think vapes were allowed.
You probably are right, but I think you're right on that end, but what the patient wants is an inventory, a list of what they took while in front of him and why they took it. Because he didn't get everything back, at least by the time of our call.
So I'm sorry, I'm back, Lori. And you are okay. Correct. We do maintain an inventory of the different items that the patients have in what's called their contraband kind of bin, where for storage that's not allowed to be on the unit. When we do searches, if we do remove anything from the patient's room, whatever we remove is documented in the incident report when that search took place. And obviously there are certain things that, even if in this case of this individual, if we remove something, if it's contraband, we're not going to give it back. It's contraband for a reason. So that's kind of how that works out.
So then we need to follow up to know that that happened.
The inventory.
Yeah, the inventory of what was taken.
It would be in the incident report.
Okay.
And I believe I heard that the patient in this incident has filed a complaint, so that'll be completely reviewed through that process as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then another thing that was said about that was, after the search, the staff made procedures on the unit more restricted. And I'm not sure in what sense. Melissa, did you? I think I might be missing what it's just said procedures. Yes. Do you have any more detail on
just,
that?
Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Now, yes. I can.
Okay, sorry. I'm having to call in on my phone while I'm also on the computer, so I just wanted to check. Yeah, the patient was just referring to the violating the least restrictive environment guidelines in their view. And I think that's what he was, you know, what they were referring to. But that's all that's the only additional note I had on that, Barb.
Okay.
One thing, Melissa and Barb, I think a lot of people seem to feel that Olmsted and it's least restrictive, mm-hmm. but it's least restrictive slash that is appropriate for the patient.
Mm-hmm.
And they always forget that portion of it. We had a explanation and speakers on what is Olmsted and what isn't Olmsted. But it has to do with that appropriateness as well as least restrictive.
Hi, this is Kay. I'd like to chime in. I know that when they do room searches and they do find contraband, because personal hygiene is also considered contraband, they just throw it on a cart. They don't generally itemize it. They just throw it all on a cart, and then it's like we have to sort through it and then put it in the appropriate places. So I don't know if there's necessarily going to be a log of things that were taken or not taken, because I haven't seen that done so far in my 2-year stay here.
Would someone want a motion to see if we could get clarification on what is the intended process and maybe that can, yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry, Lori.
Go ahead.
No, no, I was going to say that, and I think in addition to that, or maybe they have to be two separate motions, but, you know, Barb mentioned following up to see if we could see the video of the hallway that day that was within 1 to 2 hours of 8 a.m. on May 21st.
I think we could have two separate motions, one for what is the policy and is it standardized across the units for room searches, what happens to removed items, is it logged, the whole kind of policy, that could be one motion. And the second, if we want to review it, then offline we can tell ASH administration the name of the patient, the date and the time, and request that we go in and view the video of the hallway, because the rooms are never
right.
Under video.
I'll make a motion to request that the video, that we see the video for that day and time. And Melissa, I'm flipping through my pages. You just said what the day and time were.
Yeah, but I think we need to, yeah, I apologize if I shouldn't have said that, but I think we need to delineate that. We can do that in the executive session, right?
Yes. But so we have a motion for the video.
I'll second it.
Do we have a second? Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay.
So moved.
Oh, I got it. Yes.
Aye.
Thank you. So do we have a second motion on the policy and procedures?
Sure. I'll motion that we request to get the information on the policy on the room. Okay. And I guess as part of that, also, I would imagine it would be part of that, but how it's communicated also to the patients, I think I want to make sure we understand.
Okay. We have a second?
I second. Barb, second.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
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 So moved. Okay. Back to the patient visitation reports.
Melissa, okay. Yeah. The next. Okay. I'll do. The next patient, had some confusion about being able to talk. His last grievance was May 6th. And there, for this patient, there's a particular behavioral tech who is basically on his case all the time, and he put him in seclusion when he doesn't think that it's been necessary. The patients, in his last grievance, the patient said he's been watching TV. The tech comes in and turns the channel, and then when he's walking down the hall near that patient, he gets on him and he gets violent with the patient then and at other times. And it's like he's out to get the patient. And he's saying it's patient abuse. And he said that the behavioral tech sleeps on duty, and he doesn't follow procedures. He blocked the camera, quote unquote, unintentionally to block what he was doing. He's menacing to the patient. He's been moved to different units without cause, and then tech will come over another unit and still get on them. Go ahead. You can clarify, please.
No, I was just going to say, I think just to summarize the claims, the patient was claiming patient abuse, mistreatment, and unprofessional conduct by that tech, and also requested that we look at a video.
That basically sums it up.
So if there isn't a grievance on this from the patient, maybe we could request seeing that video again. We'd have to say patient, date, time. But I heard you, Barb, say that the tech was violent towards the patient. Was that kind of a figurative? I mean, was it literal violent in what way?
No.
With words, violent with physically, violent emotionally, violent how?
He's harassed him when the patient, the tech has harassed him when he's, the patient has been on a different unit and the tech comes over there to harass him. He got on him, so he was physically violent. More than one time. And I think, he's very menacing, which causes some emotional abuse to him. So
Okay, so do I hear a motion that you'd like to review a specific date and time in regard to see if the tech is physically abusing or taunting via the video and in a public area?
I move what you just said.
Okay, do we have a second?
I'll second, Melissa.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Okay, so moved.
Melissa, do you want to do the one on Cottonwood?
On another unit. This patient has a primary diagnosis that they're not getting treatment for. And, they said that there are others also who have this same diagnosis who aren't able to get treatment for the specific diagnosis. They've also requested many, many times service dog. And that's still not being provided. The hospital is telling them that it's kind of out of their hands, that rehab has to provide. So they don't feel like they're getting the treatment that is really required. They don't feel like they're showing any. Oh, go ahead.
So just maybe Dr. Flowers. I mean, you've been to other hospitals. In other hospitals, is it typical or not typical? Because I don't know, to permit or not permit service dogs in a state psychiatric hospital. I'm just trying to look at the landscape.
Yeah. The vast majority of institutions I've worked with do not have service dogs on the unit. What you will see in some tertiary care centers is some very limited pet therapy on medical surgical floors, but the general thing that I've seen is service animals are not allowed on inpatient psychiatric service.
What about having service dogs visit?
We do have that. So yeah. I'm sorry, is that Melissa or Barb? Numbers are getting confusing.
I mean, I know we've talked about it before, but on a more regular basis.
So we have one entity that brings in a service dog. I'm not entirely sure of the frequency of their schedule, but they have come in the past, and we have notified the patients of its availability. Perhaps we could do something like that more often. I'll need to follow up with rehab about the availability of that specific animal.
Yeah. Mike, if I may, I've spoken with Scott about that, and two things that our rehab team is really intent on trying to find. One is therapy animals to come visit. We had had one came in with a volunteer, and the other is barbers. Those are two things that they work really hard to get a regular contact with.
So this is Kay. We do have a service dog that comes and visits us about once every couple of months, but not since the heat. So they do provide a service dog to us about once, sometimes like in the winter and the spring. It's probably once a month, but it obviously kind of goes dark when it's summertime.
So this is D. I worked very hard on this for quite some time. And some of the feedback I've heard is that the dogs do arrive, but they don't stay for very long. So a lot of patients are feeling they don't get the time with the animals that would be beneficial. I'm happy to work on this a little bit more for you guys if you would like me to. I have multiple contacts that I have worked with, you know, or have been, you know, emailing back and forth and spoken to on the phone for several years.
No, I think, you know, as a state entity, we always struggle making connections like that. So if you know somebody who may be interested, you know, by all means, if you want to kind of coordinate that through Lori and then to Lisa, we can look into it. Can I clarify real quick? Are we referring to service dogs versus therapy dogs? Because there is a distinct difference.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That's my correction. It's a therapy dog.
Okay.
It is.
I believe they're therapy dogs. So yeah, I mean, I there's a lady who's up in the Cottonwood area that comes down from time to time, and she has some connections in Tucson. I haven't reached out to them in quite some time, but I'm happy to do that because COVID really made that almost impossible. People weren't, you know, able to come to visit. They weren't able to get around as much. Some of them weren't really located near there, but I do have some. I have quite a number of emails back and forth. I will revisit that.
Yeah, that'd be absolutely fantastic. And I would like to also make sure that if we're going to kind of go down this road, that we're extending that opportunity to also to our civil patients as well as the forensic patients. I don't want to seem like we're trying
to exactly.
So no, I think we're in good shape. Let's see what we can do.
So
if anybody was concerned about their safety, and I received a flat out no on that one. So, but let me understand what the restrictions would be. I mean, we need to have something maybe written in writing about what the restrictions would be for the animals, because it seems like then, you know, somebody was available to come, and this was a long time ago, but then, you know, it was kind of shut down based off of A, B, C, and D. So if we had some guidelines on which we could work in, that would be really helpful so that we aren't trying to go one direction and then get cut off in another direction.
I think we can work something out. The best way to do this would be if, like I said, if you want to touch base with Lori and Lisa, and then even if the individual that you're referring to, D, would like to contact the hospital, and we can try to coordinate just so they understand our environment. And the last thing I want to do is have these individuals kind of come down here and be comfortable.
I wanted to just clarify or close out this. So this patient, right, says that they're under order for animal assisted therapy, and they said that they keep refusing their treatment plan because they keep getting a boilerplate treatment plan, and it doesn't say what the court order says it's supposed to be provided.
Sounds like we just need some more specific, so some very specific guidelines. We know what to work in and what is allowed and what isn't allowed, and who is the contact person at the hospital. I know I can always contact Lori if I need to, but I don't know who to contact at the hospital to make that happen so that I can provide that information for.
You can certainly contact me, and I can coordinate with Scott or from rehab. ATD.
This
is Lisa Nguyen. ATD is the group we used throughout 2022. That was the I think it stands for American or Arizona Therapy Dogs, but they were certified and licensed, and we went through the whole vetting process, and the organization was called ATD.
Okay.
Thank you.
And that patient doesn't get any services for his primary diagnosis, which is
right.
Spectrum disorder. And he's also complained about the levels not being posted, and there's no services for him for ASD, and he can't do groups because of the noise. So basically, he's not getting treatment.
Yeah, we may want to just ask for the policy. It's a behavioral health hospital. So what is the policy on DD or ASD? How do you provide therapy if those things become primary versus the behavioral health? I think on Sybil, it probably is a little clearer. But on forensic, maybe if there's, you know, if there's a mandated time, or I don't know what the appropriate term is, if the plea deal was to a certain amount of time, I don't know. On the civil side, if your behavioral health diagnosis is stable, and I'm just asking because I don't know, so maybe Dr. Flowers, I mean, if you're stable behavioral health-wise, but you're not in DD or not in ASD, would you get released and just go into a facility that primarily treats that other disability, or?
On the forensic side or on the civil side, Lori?
Well, that's why I think it's gonna be different, right?
Right, so on the forensic side, they're there under the Title 13 criminal court order. So they're literally sentenced to the state hospital, so we could not transfer them to another facility. On the civil side, it's a little bit different. Obviously, we need to make sure that under the Title 36 court order, the least restrictive environment comes into play, and we need to make sure that we meet their medical and clinical needs. If we have individuals on the civil side that are becoming where we've stabilized their psychiatric condition, and as in doing so, if their secondary developmental disorder, neurocognitive disorder is the predominant behavior, then we need to start looking at transferring them into another facility, whether that be like a skilled nursing facility or something specific that can meet their behavioral health or their predominant disorder behavioral needs in order to properly care for them.
Okay. So for those,
Lori, I have a question. I'm sorry, it's Dee again. I hear that somebody who is requesting the visit, and I'm not sure exactly who that was being held back from doing that because of behavioral issues? Because I could be wrong. But it seems to me somebody's having behavioral issues, and something like a therapy dog or a service dog coming in would assist in them becoming more stable, then it seems to me that that would be something that should be offered in lieu of some behavioral issues, but I'm not sure I've heard that right.
Yeah, I was just going to ask, is there any budget allocated or request budget or providers for these specialty other specialties? Is that in the works? Is that in the budget? Is that in the ask that we can have providers come in if they're not full-time, but come in and provide those services and maybe even train the trainer and say, here's what we find works best for this, even to try to help?
Are you speaking specifically to therapy animals or?
No.
Okay.
I'm saying in general, like if someone is on the Asperger autism spectrum or DD, and there are clinicians that are trained to provide therapy, is there an ask to bring those specialists in for to service patients that are committed either on civil or sentenced on forensic, those types of services? Is it a request? Is it a wish? Is it happening? Yeah.
Yeah, so you may remember, Lori, and committee members, that back in over a year or so ago, the Senate passed Senate Bill 1444, and part of that bill was a requirement for the hospital to develop what, I'm going to get this wrong and I apologize, a clinical improvement and human resources plan, I believe that's what it was called, where it specifically asked us to identify needs for the facility. That report is due to be published to the legislature and the governor's office on September 1st. And there are, and so my team and I have been writing that, and there are requests in that document specific to this very need, kind of the unmet need that we realize that our patients have some needs for services that right now the hospital is currently not able to provide in volume to their need. So we are asking for some support.
That's good.
Mike, if I may just add, we're working closely with rehab right now to look at our rehab programming, and we have two different committees that work with our psychology team and our social work team, along with our clinical team. We have a tremendous number of services on the forensic side that are not always utilized by patients. There are patients, and the rehab team estimates maybe 60% of our patients that just do not actively participate in the programming that is available. And that includes, you know, rehab programming, didactic programming, group psychology programming. So that one of our challenges is just motivating a percentage of our forensic patients to actively engage in the treatment that is available, in addition to the tremendous work Mike has been doing to identify, analyze, and kind of quantify the additional services that would benefit those patients who are really seeking recovery-based services.
And why do you think that happens, Lisa?
Why do I think that there are patients who aren't engaged?
Correct.
I hate to speculate, but as I'm talking to patients, the ones who are actively engaged are the patients that, you know, we don't see incident reports about, or we don't really, I mean, the treatment teams and the rehab teams and the staff, you know, have really positive, collaborative, supportive relationships with them. I can't speak to why somebody on a forensic unit would just choose to do anything other than be actively engaged in the treatment that would get, you know, get them moving forward. So I just can't answer that. I can just say that's certainly what I observe, and that's what our treatment teams have indicated.
I wonder, this particular patient, It's only one person, right? But they were also saying, to your point, Lisa, that, which I appreciate, but that like the group room can, or being in a group, for example, is very tough for them as an environment, right? To sort of be in and receive treatment.
We do provide one-to-one treatment. One-to-one treatment is available to all of our patients if they choose to utilize it.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, is that it for the visits?
I think that's it, and I just wanted to go back to the first two that Barb reported on, because I don't know if we need a motion for this, but one of those two patients asked that we review their records and that they would sign a release for us, and I don't know if that needs to be a motion, so.
I think they need to, we should have a motion. We'll have to make sure they get an ROI. In mm-hmm. executive session, you can tell the committee who the patient is and the unit. And so if you want to make a motion, go ahead and make a motion.
Okay, I'll make a motion that we review the patient's records.
I second.
All in favor?
Aye.
So moved. And just for clarification, is it the same type of review that was done last time? It was nursing notes and incident reports and everything?
It's definitely incident reports. I don't know. We might have to discuss the extent of that. I'll tell you some more.
Okay. Thank you. So before we go to incident and accidents, I just wanted to let you know I was notified that the civil forum is scheduled for Friday the 28th in 8 days, 9 a.m. in the civil auditorium. What we discussed, and I think it would be a wonderful idea, though at this point I can't make it because I have commitments out of town. If we have at least two members that could attend, that they could stay after, and patients would now, on the civil side, if they wanted to stay after and talk to the committee, they could. Years ago, we were on site a lot more, and when we were on site on civil, people would see us there, and then they would want to talk to us. So I think it's an opportunity, if any committee members will be in town, if they could go to that, that's one. And two, if we can't do that, could we have a virtual, a laptop, and participate via laptop in the meeting and then maybe talk to them after? It's not ideal, but since it's 8 days from now, I can't make it in there.
Lori, one thought that occurs to me, because we just recently scheduled the civil forum, if you would, and we have, our goal is to do one about every quarter, we would certainly be able to talk about pushing it back and scheduling it later, if that would make it possible for committee members to come.
Well, we have most of the committee on.
What's the date again?
For the civil forum, it's February 28th, Friday.
July
28th. Yeah.
July. Okay.
And it'll, from tomorrow. It'll be in the auditorium, 9 a.m. And the forensic forum is scheduled for Friday, August 4th at 1 p.m. in the forensic gym.
Okay, I might be able to make the, you said the 28th?
Yes.
Even though I live in Tucson, I might be able to do that. I got a busy week that week, but it's possible. I'd have to visit that though and figure it out.
Oh, that'd be great, T.
I don't know if video would be an option, Lori, but we may be able to set up like a conference audio line for members to call in on the 20th if they like to. That room is fairly large, so there may be an issue with like the audio clarity, but if we can help, definitely Lisa and her folks can help accommodate that.
That's for sure. And as I said, the other alternative is we could reschedule it if it would be a time where we could have more committee members in person. We can do that too.
Okay. Well, this is the, I'm happy to try to make it up there.
I can.
Barb, you were breaking up. I'm hoping you said you could come.
I said I'm pretty sure I can come. Yeah.
Oh, great. So then we'd have two committee members. That would be great. Well, thank you. Okay, so I know it's Dee's birthday and there's no place that she'd rather be. So let me start in with these incident and accident. So the first one is Ash 2023-2430, and it is self-harm. And with this particular patient, they're wearing protective helmets and mitts and jumpsuit to protect from self-harm, but as is, and the patient's on a one-to-one, but as the patient was showering, the tech inadvertently put down their hygiene bucket and the patient swallowed something out of that and had to go to the hospital. But this same patient appears many times this month and swallowing all kinds of things, but it, as I read through a series of them and you'll see other numbers, it almost appears that the patient likes going to the ER because they request going to the ER. So I don't know how, I mean, one, they have the helmet on, the mitts on, the jumpsuit. And it seems like after reading through several reports, the minute any of that's taken off, some self-harming behaviors happen. In an effort to get to the ER. Later on, you'll hear one where they're at the ER and they have self-harm at the ER to where they have to call a code at the ER and bring in security. So it's a confusing behavior that I'm not sure.
Yeah, Lori, you may remember, and members, you may remember, it was either in the June meeting or the May meeting that I spoke about one of our patients who does this behavior with the specific intent of being sent across the street to the emergency room. And our concerns with the emergency room folks at Valley Wise that enable that behavior as far as kind of, you know, giving this individual high fives when they show up. It's a constant battle that we're working on with this, but this is very much a learned behavior that the individual has set in place to get what they want. And ultimately they want to go to the emergency room.
It seems frequent. So that was on the June 5th. On the 6th, they had returned from Valley Wise Hospital and stated that they wanted to return to the ED and had behaviors again, trying to get back to the ED. It doesn't seem like that. And that was report Ash 2023-2459. And I didn't even put all of them on here, but there were several others. I don't know if I have it, but one of them where that a patient was over there and had behaviors when they were told they were going back to the hospital that ended up in a code gray and security being involved. So that's just unusual. And I'm not sure what to do. The next one, which is, I had questions about, it was unusual. It's Ash 2023-2441, and it was sexual interaction, patients involved. But as I read through this, it appears that the writer of the incident report, at the direction of an Ash EMT, emergency medical tech, maybe? I don't know. Called Phoenix Police to report a sexual assault. And then they refer to other IRs, AS 23-2433, AS 23-2438. Both of those aren't in the reports I could see, so I couldn't review those. But they requested that they come out between, and it appears between two different patients on two different parts of a unit. So I'm not sure if it was consensual, but then it's a reportable offense because, and I don't know them. This is a question, conjecture, is sexual intimacy not permitted on the civil side or the forensic side, or if it is, when? But they came out, the officers did come out. So my questions are, is that permittable or not? And they said it wasn't a follow-up, it wasn't a sexual assault, it was consensual. That's one. And two, the incident reports that they refer to are not in the report package I was given.
Lisa, were those other two reports combined into the one that Lori was given?
Lori, do you mean the police reports?
No. Well, in here it says, if you look at the description, it says the rider at the discretion of Ash EMT called Phoenix Police to report a sexual assault. Later it says it wasn't an assault. It was not an assault, but it was reference, and it was between two patients. And they're referencing incident report numbers. So it's incident report Ash 23-2433 and Ash 23-2438. So I looked for, I was going to go back and read those.
I probably can, if it was 24, 33, and 38, if they're not included as reviews, they probably didn't rise to the level, because the report that runs for this group are those that are coded to be any of the, you know, so obviously the IOC doesn't see probably 60% of the incident report where somebody forgets a badge or somebody breaks something, yeah. Or, you know, so it might've been that it didn't rise to the level. But we contacted the police as a precautionary measure so they could confirm. We worked with our social work team, and we notified the Joint Commission just to confirm that it was not a sentinel event. So I had a conference call with a member of the Joint Commission patient safety staff to confirm that it was consensual sex between two civil patients. Their individual treatment teams worked with them. And I can definitely look for those incident reports, but I think the reason you don't have them is because they didn't elevate to a reportable incident.
Okay. The other question is, if they're on civil, do they have guardians or they don't have guardians? And if they have guardians, were the guardians notified and asked if that was okay with them as well?
Guardians are always notified when there's a fall, a seclusion, or a restraint, an assault. The guardians would have been notified. I'm going to look up those other two reports for you.
Okay, thank you. Let's see. Next one, again, I don't want to not look at you because I have a dual monitor, so turn off the camera. And Dee, I'm trying to rush through this so you can enjoy your birthday, so let's get on to the next one. This one was asked.
There's nobody here. I'm telling you, it's okay. Don't worry.
Oh, we're here for you. So.
No, I know. My husband is stuck in surgery, and I'm just here by myself, so it's fine.
This is okay. Dee's party.
And Lori, just to confirm, I've looked up both those other IRs. They are in the system, and those are the ones that document the social works notifying the guardian. So that's in the other IRs that are referred to.
Okay. Thank you. So this one is Ash 2023-2458. And in this one, it was a patient self-harming, reporting to the RN, I just swallowed two quarters. I want to go to the ER. So when they did that, let's see. they weren't going to send the person to the ER. So then what the patient did, because the patient wanted to go to the ER, then they gulped down the contents of a cool disposable hot pack. So I think that must be with the food items. So they called poison control to see, you know, advise what they should do. And when they found out that in addition to the cool pack, they had also swallowed quarters, then they suggested that she should go to the, or the person should go to the emergency room. So the RN called the on-call, and then they sent the patient to the ER. But my question, what is, again, I know it's tricky, what are immediate go to the hospital items versus what aren't? I know batteries can be really bad. I didn't know quarters were as bad. Maybe it's quarters with a disposable hot pack, but is there a policy on this must always be seen?
I'm not, that's a great question, Lori. I'm not sure if there's a policy. Lisa can do some research on that for you, but it's going to be at the discretion of the provider as far as the potential risk to the patient. You're absolutely right. In most cases, coins or quarters, uncomfortable, but they will pass. Batteries, even in most cases, not all batteries are really an issue as far as from a health perspective. It's the lithium ion batteries that are those like flat batteries that go on watches or like, you know what I'm talking about, that pose the most risk. But it really is to the discretion of the provider out of an abundance of caution, whether or not we would send somebody out to make sure that they're, and when I say send somebody out, I mean to the ER to make sure that they're safe.
I'd like to say, as in my experience as an emergency physician, it's not so much the content of the battery, but the charge. So, you know, for all the years that I was an emergency physician, batteries were a problem. Most especially those batteries that were button batteries, like the kind that go into hearing aids or into watches, because the positive and negative sides are so close to each other, it doesn't take much transmission to moist skin like esophagus or stomach to transmit the charge and cause a burn. So it's not actually what the battery is made of. The more important thing is how small the battery is, because the charge can get from one pole to the other pole easily, whereas with a larger battery, it would take transmission through the flesh of a longer distance, so it makes them relatively safer. Anyway, as you say, Michael, and as you say, this is something that should be entirely left up to the discretion of the provider in each individual case.
That's a great point, Dr. Goldstein. And I didn't even think about the negative positive pole proximity. I always assumed that it was an issue with the lithium ion contents, but that makes perfect sense.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. The next one, which was a little unusual, was ASH 2023-2584. And this one was an AWOL attempt, but on this one, it was in the morning and it was activated at CHC. So I'm not sure what CHC means, but I think looking at this, it appears like it was off campus somewhere.
CHC is the acronym for the community health clinic. That's the ValueWise clinic next door.
Oh, okay. And the patient tried to run away from staff during the appointment, and the security at ValueWise then arrived and applied their restraints on the patient because the patient became combative. And then they escorted to the ASH vehicle to transport to bring them back and take their restraints off. and then discuss with provider. And from, I think, because of this, the patient's going to be transported offsite in TSDs in order to prevent further incidents. But my question was, what is CHC?
Yeah.
Okay. Next one. This one was ASH 2023-2622. And in this case, a patient was escalating and ended up assaulting a nurse. And the patient has a one-to-one and was with the one-to-one and was accepting a medication, but then they acted out and did some things to the nurse, and a code gray was called, and patient was placed in restraints and seclusion. But then later, they were notified by hospital security that Phoenix police was coming in, and they were going to take the patient off to Phoenix PD for the assault. So they took the patient away, and the patient's mother, who is also the guardian, called. This was pretty quick, all this. This is in 20, 30 minutes. And then they informed the guardian the patient had assaulted a staff, and the patient was on their way to the Phoenix police. What my question is that I see, and you see a lot of assaults, and some of them have been, requiring medical intervention. This one doesn't say that it required medical attention or if it was that bad, but who determines that, okay, for this patient, they hit a nurse, now they're going to jail, versus someone else where they've hurt or attacked or bloody things, and they don't seem to go to jail. They just write an incident report. They may come and interview. They may come and get videos.
A great question, Lori, committee members. So essentially, it's up to the discretion of the law enforcement officer who arrives on scene. So we provide them with video evidence. If the incident happened in a video, in an area covered with video. And then it's really at the discretion of the law enforcement official whether or not they believe the individual should be taken into custody and brought off-site to a city jail or county jail for processing moving forward. Obviously, as healthcare employees, that is not a, we definitely want to make sure that our employees know that they have the right to contact law enforcement if they feel that they are the victim of a crime, an assault in this case, and we will provide law enforcement whatever evidence we have to assist them in their investigation. And then ultimately, if the county attorney elects to press charges, we will supply whatever evidence we can to proceed with the court process or the legal proceedings. But it's not the state hospital's call whether or not someone is arrested or not.
Okay. Yeah, I was just, because sometimes you see really bad injuries and
exactly.
They don't get taken away. Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. Okay, the final one is ASH 2023-2725. And this one, it was someone that we'd heard about earlier, and they were, again, trying to get back to the hospital, and they took out the Wii control batteries and swallowed them, and then went, I think then they report it so they can go to the hospital. When they reported it this time, they reported it to one of the providers, and the provider didn't feel the need to send the person to the emergency as they thought they would pass the battery out of their GI system. And then it seems like later, this was at 1900, then at about 2100, the patient was complaining of bloating, chest pain, abdominal pain. And then the provider was contacted again and then sent the patient to the hospital for chest and abdominal pain. So again, this was kind of related to my earlier question of, is there a policy? When do they go? But this seemed to be, they didn't think they needed to go, but when the patient started having symptoms, then they sent. Based on what you just said, it's up to, it, and what Chuck said, it's up to the discretion of the provider?
Correct, yeah.
Okay. So any questions on any of those that I reported? Okay, and the other one was the assault perpetrator and provider. I was going to just show quickly. So this shows that, again, and this is all kind of decoded, so you can't tell which patient it is, but you can tell by looking at this patient 91, which isn't their real number, had 41 assaults on staff and 15 on peers, high level. So you can see the red number is patient on staff, the gray number is patient on peers. So hopefully there's specific behavioral plans trying to somehow mitigate these persistent behaviors.
So absolutely, Lori, there are, and do you mind putting that back up for one quick second? I want to point something out to the folks who can see the video feed. You'll notice, ladies and gentlemen, that there is a vertical gray dotted line and shaded to the left. So that gray line is, in statistics, it's what's referred to as the upper control limit or the UCL. That essentially means that anything to the right of that limit is in the top 96th percentile, meaning that it's a statistical anomaly. That is where those are, I guess, to use a common term, your frequent flyers or your high flyers. So those are the patients that our clinical team are definitely focused on. They are the ones that we're discussing constantly. What can we do to reduce this assaultive, aggressive behavior? They're the ones that we are focusing on to make sure that we're trying to get their assaultive behavior under control. So yeah, thank you, Lori.
So on those top outliers, do they primarily have a secondary diagnosis of either a personality disorder, autism spectrum disorder, or DD that contributes to that? Is there something different about the ones that seem to always be on top than the others?
Yeah, potentially, yes. So I'm going to go out on a limb here, and I probably won't surprise anybody when I say this, but I'm fairly confident is that all these individuals who are in the kind of outlier category are going to be our civil patients. As far as having a secondary diagnosis of autism or Asperger or anything along those lines, I don't have that data in front of me, but just anecdotally, I'm going to say no. More predominantly, some of their secondary diagnosis would be neurocognitive disorder, dementia, some kind of neurodevelopmental disorder, whether that be a traumatic brain injury, something along those lines that is becoming kind of the dominant factor in influencing their behavioral patterns. But yeah, you're absolutely right in line with that one, Lori.
Do you think that, I know they're finding lots of benefit nowadays from the new levels of ECT, and also, what is it, Chuck? It's neuromagnetic massage where they massage? Yeah. Are you guys looking and considering any of that for people with these persistent behaviors?
It's like you and I are sharing a brain here, Lori. Yeah. So that we are also going to be referencing that in the that plan that we're writing for Senate Bill 1444 as far as procedures right now that the hospital is not equipped to operate, but we do believe would benefit our patient population.
Okay. Well, that's, yeah. Yeah, because I don't have it month over month, but I wonder if these same high outliers are, if they show up every month.
Yeah, the data that you presented was actually as of June of 2022 through present. So this is not like, you know, 1 month snapshot of somebody having whatever it was, 41 assaults or whatnot. This is a more than a year's worth of information that was being shown in that graph.
Okay, any questions from the committee? So we could have a call for public comment if there's nothing else for the committee, and then we'll adjourn to executive session, which is a different link. Do we have anyone from the public that would like to speak? And if so, state your name, and then if you want your name in the record, and we'll give you 3 minutes each.
Yeah. Can you hear me? This is Mr. Ward on Ginyon. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. I just want to make a quick comment here that I noticed obviously you guys have a lot to deal with. That's from what I've heard through this whole thing, it's a lot. But I did want to just mention that, you know, there's a lot of grievances written out of here on the forensic side, some are mundane, some are just unreasonable, things like that. But occasionally there is real grievances that are written, and the result always comes back favoring the hospital. And as far as I haven't heard anybody tell me otherwise, and what I've only want written run grievance my entire stay here, and my entire time that I've ever been at this hospital, even on the WIC. And the simple thing, I'm going to leave that's water under the bridge, but the PNUM, I believe they have their own meetings and all that, but they seem to be on different terms with things that they'll okay coming in. And I hate to use this term, you know, that seems like the fox watching the hen house, but yeah, that's what I've experienced, and a few people have told me about the grievances. If you would like an example, I'll give you an example, but that they are reasonable, and then it comes back to the hospital's favor, and then the resolve isn't on the favor of the patient. Can you hear me?
Yes, we're not allowed to respond, but we can hear you.
Okay. Yeah, that's all I have to say.
Thank you, Ward.
Okay, we got Rodney Woodville on SACO unit.
Hi, Rodney.
Hi. The only thing I want to bring up basically is we seem to have a recurring problem. They put a temporary like restrictive ban on the Clorox healthcare hydrogen peroxide, where they just come around and they spray that everywhere. It has a OSHA exposure limit of one part per million. You're supposed to use a respirator and all this stuff. They have another disinfectant spray is called Virex. It's only ammonium chloride, and it's not as hazardous, and it's fine. It doesn't affect people. But the odd thing what is about this is my treatment team kind of asked me if I have if I'm like germophobic or what, germophobia. And I said no, and they sort of mentioned the chemicals, and I said yes, but I have a chemical sensitivity, and I get choked up by the peroxide, the Clorox Healthcare hydrogen peroxide, and it's really not supposed to be sprayed where people can breathe it. And then all of a sudden, after talking to them about this, now the techs are bringing out, it just seems to me to be direct retaliation. They're bringing out this peroxide spray to healthcare, and they're spraying it everywhere. Now, here's the thing about this. One of the techs that was spraying that extensively everywhere, now she has a chronic cough. And I'm not sure if I had put together a letter to send to Clorox about maybe a future a class action lawsuit because people getting damaged by this because the hospital didn't curtail this spraying of this stuff, which has the MSDS one part per million exposure limit for workers spraying that stuff. Anyway, that's basically it. Oh, I do want to say there's a couple things with this. The Stephanie Ines reporter for the Arizona Reporter, the three page with the front page on the independent oversight. Senator David Cohen was for it. So you might want to write to your senator about that, David Cohen. And Steve Montenegro was opposed to it. The reporter, Stephanie Ines, she left her number in the paper. It's 602-444-8369 if people want to contact her and give her information. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, this is Robert Dunn on Mojave. Earlier, you were talking about the instance with the Tech 4. The date of occurrence was 5/6/23. Time of occurrence was 14/45. And the location of occurrence was on unit in the day room. Due to the investigation by the hospital, they sided with the hospital saying that the Tech 4 pretty much did no harm, even though he was yelling at me to effing move several times, and then coming into the day room so everybody could hear it, including patients and staff, and running after me saying he was going to break my effing neck and get me, and that I better be afraid of him. It took staff twice to intercept him and keep him away from me before they told him to go to the nurse's station. I also escalated this to Access, and Access reported back to the hospital, and the investigator said that I could not escalate it to Access unless I refiled a grievance. I'm in the process of doing that with the Arizona Administrative Codes and GEI laws and SMI laws codes. I know that it would be a lot easier to have help with this, since I'm not a legal expert in any of this. I've asked the PNUM of Mojave to help with a lawyer, and he said that the hospital is not liable for a lawyer to help me, and they didn't do a proper investigation. No questioning of patients or staff. So I mean, I leave it up to you guys and hopefully the ACDL to do a proper investigation into this and hopefully get some something resolved. So I'm not always having to look over my shoulders to be attacked or anything by this tech four. Other than that, please have a safe and weekend. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, this is Timber Briscoe on Mojave.
Hi, Tim.
I told my staff and my guardian in the last treatment team meeting I had Wednesday that I would like the ROIs sent out. The guardian basically told me, well, I'll see if I'll send them out and sign them. So it's really up to her, and we don't have a good relationship. Still on the shuffle program with providers. It's really not good for people to keep getting a new doctor every 3 months when they don't even come see you hardly. They changed my access from access one to access two after 33 years from schizoaffective to antisocial personality disorder. And they don't even have PTSD on there, which I suffer real bad from. Everybody knows I got shot and stuff. Mike Sheldon just said that the staff keeps giving the guy high five. The hospital people give the guy high fives when he comes over. Well, why doesn't the staff here give the guy high fives for doing good? It's called the Behavioral Modification Program. Look it up in the ASHES policy. An MRI and an EMG were ordered in May from the pain clinic. No appointment was ever rescheduled. The MRI was just ordered today, and this was done in May. It was ordered today. I had the EMG appointment for my leg. They canceled it, and that was last Friday. I haven't seen an endocrinologist or optometrist or dentist for over a year and a half. I'm diabetic, so I need to get an eye exam every year. Our unit has other rules than the other units, and they're more restrictive. I don't understand how a housekeeper last night can become a BHT the next day when they show up. It happens all the time. SMI rights are not being followed. And this has been talked about for quite a while. Administration, they said they didn't know anything about the phone time being extended. Well, that's how well the administration is informed by the lower totem pole here. Let's see, I'm always the villain. I have a friend whose mom, son, and brother came to visit me, give me a food visit. Somehow I'm pressuring him again to have his family come and visit me and give me hugs, and I write him letters. But I'm the villain because I'm always pressuring somebody. This never stops. This has been going on for almost 5 to 7 years. They question other people about my mom and I extorting people, God rest her soul. But, you know, I don't see how Tim is always the bad guy. Thank you.
Thanks, Tim. Do we have anyone else?
This is Mr. Ward one more time. Are you going to go too?
Yeah.
Okay. There's another gentleman that's going to speak, but I just wanted to let you know that I do my therapies. I really am pursuing of my treatment and all these things. You know, I'm very active and all that, and I have no complaints of being here. Unfortunately, I have a life sentence, but I'm doing well. And I just wanted to reiterate and say that there should be something taken a look at that. And I know there's a lot going on, obviously, but they should take a look at the complaints and then take into account how many of them are favored by the hospital as compared to how many of them are resolved and then a patient gets their thing. But now I'm going to go ahead and pass it on to the next manager.
Yes, sir. Good evening. My name is Charles Edmark with Van Braun's and Van Braun's PIs North America. Well, we have a request, and that is for water misters on all the patios here in Forensic, and maybe two or more for the mall tables that we eat at when we go to cafe. Also, I mentioned expanding Building 8 to give us a legitimate gymnasium. Did the IOC have any comments on that? We cannot play a real basketball game in this current small one. Another issue is debit card swipe for going to different groups. We don't like having to carry our paper around like a passport. We shouldn't be able to just get the provider of the group our card and they scan it and that's that for recognition. And also we'd like to request the return of our HP laptop. When this new hospital opened, the six units had a HP laptop. I can't write a confidential private letter to my doctors. Anybody can come in and see what I'm writing. And wrapping it up here, we'd like a second mirror for the largest of the two weight rooms. We successfully advocated that 2 years ago. We're doing a straw poll where everyone would like to have the second mirror placed. Wrapping it up here. Well, I appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
This is Timber Briscoe again. When they did that unit search on Sunday morning, where the vape was found in a patient's room, when they confiscated some of his stuff, which I seen was a whole cart full, they even took his towel, personal towel, which other people are allowed to have their personal towel, and they took a picture of him at his bar mitzvah, which is, I don't see how a picture of somebody at their bar mitzvah could hurt anybody and become contraband. So, and I said something about my axis being changed after 33 years. They only see me 3 to 4 times for 15 minutes because I was on the shuffle for every 3 months. I was getting a new psychiatrist. 3 to 4 times they see me for 15 minutes. And they changed the access to, you know, I already told you, but you heard, mm-hmm. And when they do investigations, they are supposed to come and record the conversation, but they've got a way around that and found a loophole to bring another staff member, another investigator with them, so they can correspond on what was said, and then they make up their own story. Because you can say you said something else, where is it on recording? You can't have it because they don't take it like they used to. Terrence Skaggs had a bunch of brand new audio recorders for the staff to use during their investigation. They used to use them, now they don't.
Okay. Thank you, Tim.
Lisa Nguyen said the guardians are always informed on everything when something happens. That's false. That is false as heck. Because when I quit eating for a week and quit taking my meds for a week, when my mom was still alive and she was my guardian, nobody ever called her. Nobody ever told her, except for me. I'm diabetic. I need to eat, but I quit for a week and they never called my guardian. They weren't okay. Too worried.
Thanks, Tim. Do we have anyone that we haven't heard from? Or if not, we'll go to executive session, which is, remember, a whole different link. And Larry, is it the same phone number for Kay?
Yes, it would be. It's in the chat.
It's a different phone number, Kay, so you may want to write it down.
I don't have access to a pen. I'll just have to skip, I guess, the next time I'll bring a pen to the meeting.
Well, is there someone that can get you a pen?
Yeah, if you guys don't mind waiting, let me go get one.
Okay.
Yeah, Lori, can you also give me that too? That, whatever that
okay.
is.
Okay. Yeah. It's, sorry. It's 507-591-1048. And the pen is 744-487-484 pound.
Okay, thank you.
Happy birthday, Dee. Happy birthday, Dee.
Happy good evening.
Good night, everybody. Thank you.
Okay.
Good night.
I'll wait. Yeah. Okay. We'll see that. Yeah, I'm gonna wait for Kay to give her the number.
Lori, I have a pen.
While we're waiting on Kay, can we get a motion to go into executive session?
Well, that's right. I motion to go into executive session. Do I have a second?
Second.
Thanks, Alice. Okay, so Lori, here is, yes?
Oh, can I get the phone number?
Yes, it's 1-507-591-1048. And the PIN number is 744-487-484 pound.
Okay, I'll see you guys there in a second.
Okay.
Thank
see you.
You
in a second.
Okay, well, I'll transfer over there and open it up.
Thank you. Bye. Have a good evening for others that are not joining us.
Hi, this is Bea. I'm on.
Hi, Bea. It's Kay. I'm here.
So fuck. See, because I'm on a phone. Are you on a phone too, or are you on Google Meet?
No, I'm just on a phone always.
Oh, there.
Yeah, thanks.
Hi, this is Alice. I miss.
Hi, Alice. Kay and G are here.
Hey, Alice. Good to hear from you.
Give everybody a second. I think we're waiting on. They're coming in now.
Hi, Larry.
Hi. All right. Fantastic, everybody. Sorry about the jumping back and forth, but those are the rules we got to play by, unfortunately. Let me go ahead and start the recording for the group, okay?
Okay, so the one thing I wanted to share with you guys is that
it didn't work to connect the Google Meet.
Was that Barb?
Yeah, that's why I was calling. But said I'll join the meeting when someone lets me in.
Oh. Well, it took a while because Larry had to get over there.
Amazing.
We just got in. Okay, so one thing I wanted to give everyone an update. It was a little discouraging when we didn't have more authority, as patients have reported some